From the summer business meeting of the cattle industry, we've got another of our Ag Perspectives podcast for you today. How to Neighbors, Ron Hayes. And joining us is Don Close from Rabo Agri Finance. He was on the program in one of the committee meetings and also just taking in a lot of the discussion at this year's event. He talked with us about a variety of things going on, including the latest on African swine fever from a Rabo agri-finance perspective, as well as some work that they've done on the shortfall of the corn crop this year and its impact on the cattle industry. We get into all that today here with our conversation with Don Close.
Don, let's talk maybe about where we are right now. Here we are end August. And as we get here to the hot dog days of summer, these final days before we maybe start breaking a little bit for the fall, a lot of things are on the minds of cattle producers. We've got the African swine fever in the kind of the background still as far as the cattle industry is concerned. Corn crop, a lot of worries out there, a lot of uncertainty about how this thing may play out.
You know, Ron, in all the years that I've been in this business, I don't know that I can recall a time that we have had so many market-driving factors all coming to culmination at the same time. And just if you reflect back on the old Donald Rumsfeld quote, is so many the unknown unknowns, and that's clearly what we're dealing with. It creates opportunity in the marketplace, no doubt, but it also creates tremendous volatility and uncertainty. The sad part of that tale is, it doesn't matter if it's trade negotiations with China or any of our USMCA, the condition of our corn crop. There are just a lot of these things that are not yet played out to know how to play them.
Now, you are going to be reporting here at NCBA's the summer meeting on some of the international factors. What are you really seeing as the key points we need to be watching?
Well, without question, the biggest bombshell in the marketplace today is the continuous expansion of ASF in China. Just what that means. Rabo has now revised our estimates that we think that sow herd is or will be reduced by as much as 50%, and that's from early announcements that we thought it would be 10 to 20. That creates a shortfall of pork in China of something between 6 and 10 million metric ton gap, that there's simply not enough pork in the world to fill that void. Somebody's going to go without. Now, the question comes up, and producer frustration is, okay, if this is going on, why are we not seeing more reaction to prices in the marketplace? And actually, we are. Retail prices in China have started to escalate. But the thing is, this disease continues to spread into new regions. The first behavior of producers is to take all the healthy hogs and rush them to market as quickly as possible. That, in turn, keeps the short-term pipeline supply of product to the marketplace filled and even cold storage. But it's just kicking the can down the road in the complexity that this disease situation will cause once they run out of hogs to go through.
Yeah. I guess, you know, when you look at the situation in China, it's really dire, but we're also seeing, as you mentioned, it's spreading. I mean, I know we've talked about Vietnam.
Absolutely. It basically, with very few exceptions, it is spread throughout Southeast Asia. Vietnam, as you mentioned, has been particularly hard hit. South Korea is very vulnerable. We know it's in North Korea. Earlier this week, I was hearing speculations that the idea that it was in Thailand. So we focus our conversations on China, but the reality is it's all Southeast Asia. The other thing is, this thing is in Eastern Europe. We've known that for a while. You know, there's been protection measures taken to try to keep those wild boars from traveling into Western Europe. But at this time, 60 to 70% of the pork that is being imported into China is originating in the EU. If that disease spreads from Eastern Europe into Western Europe and we go to whole country blockades, Germany, France, Denmark, then that just collapses that flow of pork going into China and makes the situation even more explosive. So, and then just this past week, we know of Bulgaria is having increased cases of ASF. So it's active all over.
I know, and the impact, I guess, for the U.S. Hog herd, you know, we're seeing China already talking about looking the other way on tariffs when it comes to pork from the U.S.
If you look at the volume of pork, U.S. pork going to China, and the perception that is out there is that the tariffs have been prohibitive for shipments, that's actually not true. It's not true twofold. One is that wholesale pork prices in the States are at a level opposed to the Chinese pork prices for pork. We're competitive even with the tariff in place. The other is if you look at the weekly export pace, and just throughout the month of June and July, we've seen a huge escalation in the weekly export data of U.S. pork going to China. Smithfield has been the leader in that deal, but you've also have Tyson involved in that situation. Seaboard's involved in that deal. So the perception that no U.S. pork is getting to China is simply not true. A lot of that product that is currently shipping to China is being bought through COFCO or the Chinese government-owned trading companies, so that China is not charging themselves the tariff. So they're really that pork is leaving the U.S. essentially at the non-tariff price.
Right. Beyond China, okay. Other things that you're watching or maybe talking to the NCBA folks about today.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've spent a lot of time on in our office this summer is with the damage that has been done to this year's corn crop. And we still have the uncertainties of the revised acreage estimates that will be released August 12th. And the first production estimates start to at least let us narrow in what we think that shortfall will be. But what we've spent time in years of escalating corn prices, what are the effects between different weight classes of cattle? What are the effects on grading percentages of fed cattle? What does it do to carcass weights? And what the big takeaway from that is, as corn price goes higher, the cattle feeder looks to place a heavier and heavier steer to shorten up the days on feed. The market reaction to that is price of all classes of cattle goes down, but the price of the yearling steers, the big steers, goes down at a much slower rate than the price of calves. So as a result of that, we really think the most vulnerable class of cattle in the system is this year's calf crop. Right. So we've been encouraging clients to aggressively move those cattle, use the summer video sales. The one pitfall we see is we think that for the guy that does nothing and elects to wean that calf and sell it in the fall. And I know there are fewer and fewer of those guys that just do that. But If with the incredibly good grass conditions we have this year, producers should be able to leave cattle out longer. Right. So that has a tendency to bunch marketings of cattle by itself. If that movement of cattle is delayed until we get into the first of corn crop, we see there's shortfalls in this crop. Corn price starts to escalate, it could be a double whammy because of pooled group marketings and the effect of higher corn prices. So Right. We see vulnerability with the calf price going forward. Our research has shown that it does not necessarily have a negative effect on carcass weights because of the old adage of cattle heavy in or heavy out, that carcass weights actually pretty well stay on track. But it does have a detriment as we have reduced days on feed. It does have a tendency to drag down that quality grade. So those are things to look for there.
Of course, obviously the industry is very proud of the fact that we're getting more prime carcasses. Sure. That could be a problem if you have fewer days on feed.
Yes, it is. Now, the one thing that I absolutely think we need to make point of is if we've seen this 25-30% increase in the percentage of cattle grading choice and prime over the last 20 years, the quality of the cattle is that much better.
Right.
So I don't think we will see as much drag on yield performance or quality performance as what we have seen in years past. I also think with that genetic potential that is built into that animal, once conditions normalize, I think we'll see that quality grade recover at a much faster pace than we have historically.
Let's talk about that mid-year summer inventory, the cow number especially, but overall numbers as well. Did anything that really jumped out at you?
I think the real takeaway from that is the handwriting is on the wall that this cycle of expansion is completed. Even with the escalated cow slaughter that we are seeing, if you take that against the increased numbers of cows, I don't think we're killing an excessive number of cows. But what we are seeing, if you look at the percentage of heifers in either the on-feed mix or the fed slaughter mix, we have stopped pouring new cattle into that system. So we think that we can see an incredibly flat period here of the next 2 years of cow numbers holding in this 32.5 million head range,
right.
And it won't be until 2021, 2022 before the effect of the reduced heifers introduced into the breeding herd will really have an effect. So we think that provides a period of stability of flat numbers here for another 2 years. But I also think there's some positive connotations to that, that of implications that it will, our next correction or downsize in the breeding herd number will really be shallow. And without the advent of drought is the one caveat I would put in that. But with normal weather conditions, we think this next correction will be really shallow.
One last question. You know, you mentioned drought.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we had a sharp correction in the number in the beef cow herd number, 2013, 12, 13, 14, in that time period. We came back. We're back basically back to that level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different cow herd, though, now. It's a genetically superior cow herd. Is that right?
I think that is absolutely true, and there's nowhere that is more visible. I spent some time over the past year and working with some customers in the Central and South Texas area that was so heavily depopulated during the drought, and the improvement in cattle quality is just blatant. I mean, it you can see it everywhere. Yes, it's a different cow herd, but I also think that brings up a point that if you take that rapid period of growth that we saw start during the second half of 2013 and was 14, first half of 15, and you so that 2-year-old going into the system, we're going to run into a period down the road where the average age of the cow herd is more of an issue that will be a bigger factor that we can't ignore.
Thanks, Don. Don Close with Rabo AgriFinance. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.